Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this, I'll tell you about the heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopelessness, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
And appropriately... contribute to the program is 646-478-4847, 646-478-4847. Wow, I don't even know where to start tonight. You know, we got a lot of things to do, but let's start with a little Soma news, if I can find that here, if it's even on here. Look at this. Dilapidated, dilapidated, dilapidated. I think it's under, there it is. Play it, please, Maestro.
How now, brown cow? How now, brown cow? How now, brown cow?
And with that, the summer news. You know, we've had a lot of tragedy in the world over the last, going back to Katrina, really. It seems like we've gotten a little bit insensitive as a culture because we live on this 24/7 news cycle. Whether it's Katrina or whether it was a tsunami or what happened in Haiti here. And, I just kind of popped in and saw on the screen 100,000 people feared dead. I mean, that's just amazing. This is a big, transition for us because, you feel the effects of that no matter what. I mean... I saw some of the pictures of the Capitol this morning and, the devastation down there. And it's so weird. The part of me is still on the ilk of the George Carlin, mindset of, as long as it's on TV, it doesn't have that, that grip on you that it's real. But I just can't help it. When you see something this... this devastating. It's just, you're almost in awe of nature sometimes, I mean, we had a little earthquake last week in California, barely made the news. And you think about it, 24 hours ago, the biggest story in the culture, was Jay Leno, And it just shows you how far our head is up our butt when it comes to the world. Because when this kind of stuff happens, it sort of transcends war and, all the doomsday theories of, what's going to be taking us over and what China's doing and the economy and all that stuff goes away because you just see these just dirt poor people. I mean, just this horribly, ravaged country here, and I don't know what to say. Whoops. I almost said nothing. Am I still here? Hope so. Let's drop the phone. Anyway, so if you have a reaction to that you want to share, because a lot of the stuff in the show we get by with a little help from our friends, but for the most part we're trying to talk about how emotions affect behavior here, and here's something that just, for a long period of time today, it just sort of hung over me, like how insignificant everything is we're doing when, you know, it sort of puts the tennis match between us and our surroundings, which somatics is really supposed to be about, right, self and surroundings, into context, because you start seeing how big and how impersonal and how sort of seamless nature is. You know, it just happened to happen there, and all these people are under this rubble, and in our culture, with, you know, with all the cameras and everybody poking and prodding and passing an opinion about who reacts to what, you know, this is what we're going to get. We're going to get a lot of second and third and fourth waves of fodder over it, and you know, the media is going to just feast on it. To look for every angle, I guess. But, you know, I'm looking at the scenes here on MSNBC as I'm talking to you, and it's just, you know, we've had so many storms this winter, and we've had, you know, all this devastation here domestically with all the winter storms and you know, people basically dying out in the, you know, out in the Midwest from a result of, you know, 30, 40 inches of snow. And then you get something like this. It's just 100,000 people go blip in a second. 100,000 people feared dead. That's amazing. I'm in shock. I'm just looking at this. It's like, wow, what do you say? But anyway, wow. To just sort of use that as the opening salvo here, we have a little different approach to the show that I want to try, and I started out last week talking about it, because, you know, as we live under the canopy of all this terrorism and all this, you know, sort of hatred, I guess you call it, that goes on around the planet here, and what I want to be able to do is have you understand that there's a sort of a basement to this. There's a Filene's basement. A lot of this stuff, and it deals with biology. Now, I was on Dr. Todd's show last Thursday. If you go to somaspace.org and sign up for my newsletter of vital interest, you'll get the link to it, or you can just email me over at makeitsummer@gmail.com. I'll send it to you. I was on with Dr. Todd and the Coini man, I guess his name is, the quantum physics guy, and if you've listened to this program for 2 seconds, you know my attitude about quantum physics and all that stuff as it relates to consciousness and all that stuff. And basically what I was trying to get out of that in that show was that when you get down to it, when you really deal with life in and of itself, you're dealing with these relationships, these rhythms that we are awash in. And becoming aware of them and being able to share them is really the gift. And that's one of the things that, you know, I guess it kind of got me kicked out of the conventional club a while ago. So, you know, I come up here every week and I talk to myself, you know, here on the show. And I'm trying to give you guys just a little bit of a sample of what it is to sort of go the next level, beyond the surface experience, and really get into how you process things. And then to get into the little deeper layer, how you were wired up in the beginning, how you biologically wired up. Like I said before, this basement is biological, and it's not a flat surface that's very linear and predictable. It's not all cubby holes down there, okay? And what I'm trying to share with you is something that I kind of came to know, I guess, as a result of my little digging around down there, and that the biology is intimately woven in with our social life out here, because the way we're designed is we're designed to live interactively. We're designed to live as social animals, right? So when you get into it on that level, now you get into the cusp of, well, where does science end and where does spirituality begin, and how do you deal with other than waking life, you know, imagination, dream, memory, all that stuff, that's the fun part of somatics. That's the part of somatics I wish I could rap about every week with you guys. But we're dealing with the grist and the grind and the, you know, out here every week, because this is where the stress comes from. And what I want to offer you with this show and the other things I do over on somerspace.org and through the happy little weekly frisbee I toss out there called Of Vital Interest, OVI, that you could subscribe to at somerspace.org, is some tools, is some social stress solutions, because it's unavoidable, you know? And there's so much going on out there to cause us to like, this earthquake today, right? If it's 50 years ago, 50, 60 years ago, we might hear about it, you know, in the newspaper. Maybe you hear a little report on the radio. There's two or three networks that will report on it for a couple of minutes. But for the most part, it's in and out of your ears. You might hear about it, but it's not going to dominate your day. It could dominate your day at this point in 2010. And, you know, some of the things that came out of it was that social media really kind of rose to the fore here, because millions of dollars are raised on Twitter, under text pledges and things like that. It's been amazing, actually, the outpouring for people, you know, through this. And again, we're, like I said, I don't want to say we're getting good at it, but we're sort of getting used to mobilizing ourselves through the social media when these things happen. That digital nervous system that Bill Gates talked about, you know, years ago, is really starting to get organized. It's starting to develop some interesting qualities when you have a crisis like this, or when you have political unrest, or when you have information that's leaking out from the different sources, and that curtain they used to. You just have to go behind the curtain and behind the scenes, and the curtain's almost down. So it's like, you know, almost anything that happens, we know the backstory of it. You know, even in the last 24 hours in my little sports talk world, so much went on that we'll get to tonight that really makes you think about, well, what is it that we don't know about people anymore? We have so much put in front of us, basically, that wouldn't he have time to digest it all, really? So when you look at this story that's evolving down in Haiti, you know, what do you take from it? Do you take the humanitarian side of it? Do you take the political side of it? Do you just take the spiritual side or the karma? You know, what do these little kids do to deserve this? You know, wow, it gets pretty deep. So if you have an opinion about it, before we get to our guest at about 9:45, you could pop in at 646-478-4847, and we'll get to that and any reactions you have about it, because there's so much. Like I said, I'd love to talk about it with anybody that calls in, because I just want to know how it hit your beach. You know, this is. I mean, I hate to say it, guys, but it dwarfs what happened on September 11th. Dwarfs it in terms of the magnitude of the people and the political ramifications. It's a country that just got leveled. You know, we lost the city with New Orleans for a number of years. It's still on the way back. And now you got this whole country that's basically just, you know, it's in rubble. So I just, well, if you have a reaction, this is a show about social stress. That's about as devastating as it gets. If they fear 100,000 people are dead, maybe there's more. I don't know. There's a 7.0, I think, earthquake, something like that. So, you know, the world said, ha, and Gaia is, you know, Gaia's snorting along, you know. I was coming out of my daughter's winter concert, and in my usual harried mode, and I kind of glanced up, and there was a picture of the solar system right there in the hallway, and I just kind of stopped and went, whoa, cosmic moment for Filippi. And you just look around all the planets in the solar system, and you just, you know, This is our milieu. This is this little, you know, this Milky Way. It was like, you don't really get chunked up to that level very much. And having spent the whole day, like I said, with this news of this tragedy just pouring out from every orifice of the media here, it just made me stop and reflect. Like, you know, you get so bogged down in minutia, little stuff, little conflicts, little battles, you know, back and forth. And like I said, the last night it was the big deal was the Jay Leno thing. And Mark McGuire coming out about steroids yesterday, that was a big deal. And the guy that quit Tennessee, Lane Kiffin, to go take the job at USC, that the other guy quit to go coach at Seattle now. I mean, all those things are just, really, I mean, come on. These things were dominating the news. So it's like I said, we live in that TMZ culture now where there's just this constant churning of gossip and innuendo and rumor and speculation and opinion, and just everything's become op-ed. Everything's become sort of, you know, what did you say? What did you think? And how did you react to what this guy said? And it's really gotten to be very high school. And then you get to where there's actually events or games or something that gives a result. And then the geeks come along and invent another way to communicate about it. And we're back where we started. So I don't know how the conversation evolves. So, but anyway, what I want to do here tonight before we get our guest in here is I want to give you guys a little bit of a sort of a guided tour of something I've been kicking around. I call it the spicy meme ball. It's called the Somatic Method. Now, of course, Soma Time, Somatic Method, Soma Space, I'm Soma Boy. If you go on Twitter, at Soma Boy, that's me. Why am I so stuck on the Soma? Why is the Soma so fun? So much fun being with the Soma. Well, I mean, it's got a lot going for it because, well, I'll let Elvis tell you first.
Okay? Two things you need to know. I'm the king. And number two is, look out, man!
Yeah, see? Because unlike psychology, somatics is contextual. Somatics gives you a way to look at the environment interactively. And it also doesn't fixate your identity on the external. It looks at things from the inside. Now, psychology likes to go in with their maps and flips on the light and then puts a bunch of maps, like a wallpaper on the walls in there, and says, well, you're introverted, and you're neurotic, and you're this way. And they take all these characteristics about you, and they construct this personality, right? Now, your brain don't do that. Your brain deals with perception, and it has to process events in a certain way to feel safe, all right? Now, they don't talk about it a lot. You can Google it. There's a couple articles on it on the web. It's called neuroception, all right? This is the nervous system's perception of itself. You know, everything's a feedback loop in nature. So as the nervous system is processing all this information, it's determining, as it's doing this, am I in an environment that I can handle? And it does it at a very, very steady rhythm. 4 seconds. Dun, dun, dun. Boom. Am I safe or do I have to adapt? And in that four-second window, you're basically completing a breath and a blink, and that's about it. And your system has to say, jump cut, do I have to go to a different physiology? Do I have to dial into a different orientation? How do I shift my awareness in that little pocket? And that's the somatic education that I try to give people every single day. Your life's happening in these little four-second epochs, these little rhythms, and you have to determine which one of the four options, domains, perspectives that are fixed in your nervous system are you going to perceive from. And guess what? Your batting average with that determines what's called your sense of coherence. How clear are you in the moment, right? And then if you look at that process over time, you start seeing how you're doing it, you know, on a longitudinal level, and that determines your well-being, right? So if you throw health and disease out the window, let's just throw them out the window, that's all you got. Somatics is very simple. It's not glamorous. It's no frills. It's the Southwest Airlines of science. There ain't a lot of things hanging off of it, but, you know, they throw a lot of grape jelly on top of it, but for the most part, that's all it is. It's these little rhythms that go on and scale up and down in the nervous system and through your entire organism and through all of your consciousness, actually, all these different dimensions, and it determines one thing. It's like an umpire. Are you safe or are you out? And if it says out, then I have to shift to a different orientation that might not be one I'm really good at, which means now I have to adapt and learn, or it's one that I'm really good at, and it brings me survival. It's the stuff I've done before. It's from memory. I kind of say, okay, this is what works, and this is the way I'll breathe, this is the way I'll move, and this is the way I'll feel. Right? And over time, that develops what they call interfaces. And your nervous system has six of them, right? And when it goes through those things, it starts out in status quo, and it ends up in a new status quo. But somewhere in the middle, it has to shift its rhythm. And that process is called transition. Now, your nervous system and your brain ain't dumb. It has a plan. And it does this twice a year, six-month cycles. It's called transition cycle. That takes you from security, security, all the way up to spontaneity. Freedom, right? Now, it doesn't get there easy. It goes through a whole bunch of things. It goes through motivation, which is your movement patterns. All right, that's when it goes from, okay, now here I'm secure in my breath and my energy and my rhythm and my metabolism and everything. All my baselines are here. And all of a sudden, boom, something comes in to shock you. This news today apparently can shock a lot of us, right? Something shocks you. Now, your threshold for getting shocked is determined early on. Some people have a high threshold, like our subject tonight, and some people have a low threshold, like our subject next week. Okay, well, we're going to get to that in a minute. Once you're shocked, you have to have a coping mechanism to kick in that you trust. You get your shield up, friends, Romans, and that involuntary process of status quo, shock, and shield, right? Those three things, that cycles through in 4 seconds. If the shield isn't there, then you start to go into the second part of it, which is more external, more like, I need help, right? So you start going to the outside. You go to your habits. You go to things that are ingrained in you, things that are deeper than just your reflex reaction. And then you start getting into behaviors that don't have many options to them. All right, so then what happens after that is that you then go into the next stage, which is try to relate to other people that you're not doing too well. You start to reach out. You start to get a little jumpy. And then if that doesn't work, wow, now you got to get spontaneous, which is funny because now you're in a really complex place, but you can only do really rudimentary behaviors because you've exhausted all your reserves. That's how social stress becomes a really, really difficult obstacle to take care of because it doesn't just affect you psychologically. It affects you physically. It affects you emotionally. It affects your energy. It affects your ability to communicate, your ability to remember stuff. You get stugatz with it. And people get, you know, socially intoxicated. I'm sick of these people. All right? So I created a little book. And I've mentioned on the show numerous times. It's called The S-List, and The S-List book takes you through this somatic method process of profiling. Profiling? He said profiling? Yes, he did say profiling. And what profiling does is it sort of gives you a look at the way you've internalized your experiences, because everybody profiles. Your brain has to. It's built for bias. It's built to run on 80% memory, 20% novel experiences. Anything more, and it becomes sensory overload, and you can't even think straight. So the idea that we're going to profile at the airports, we're going to profile here, it's all redundant. We're just taking what's biologically true to us, and we're putting it into society. Now, when you start to prejudge and fix those things, and sort and judge and have a preconceived, like I said, it slides through the habits, and then you start getting into, wow, now we have a full tank of gas, we have the cars rolling, and we have no steering wheel. So the ability to be able to override those things and be able to be neuroplastic about it is really the process of what somatic education gives you, which is to know that you're almost always on automatic pilot. You're almost always profiling. When you get a mismatch, when something happens that you don't expect, again, the shock thing, that's when you have to have the elasticity to be able to overcome it and to steer it to different orientations. All right, so to give you kind of an overview on it, the gist of it is in the S-List book, and you can get that over there, like I said, you click on where it says Meet the Four Domains on the homepage on somaspace.org, and I'll click along with you. Let's go see. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's see. Where am I? Bop. Okay. First day in Somaspace, it says. You click on that. Brings you to the page where the S-List book is broken down section by section. All right, now, I'm just going to pop up one here that's called the process. All right, this is the process of profiling. I'm doing this out loud so you hear it. All right, now, S-lists are guided by something called profiling. All right, so here's the Reader's Digest version. Profiling is, ready, the confirmation of a preconceived other than conscious idea. Okay? It's a bottom-up process. It comes from your body to your brain. When you go into the local supermarket, you're able to go down the aisle, ignore lots of information, lots of stimuli, lots of background noise, lots of other things to focus on, right? All you experience is the intent to find out what's on that list in your head, right? Profiling is a process of matching up the world with millions of internalized lists, just like that, to achieve or retrieve a degree of inner resonance. You're just trying to get back to the clarity. When you don't match up, you feel distracted, preoccupied, tense, off center, you know, stress. On a grand scale, that familiar inner rhythm steers your social identity. It creates it. It sculpts it out of nothing. All right? So it's a frequency thing, babies. All right? So that's what the process is. I don't want to hear any more about profiling at the airport. That's all that is. Okay? Now, most of you don't know what a soma is. I have a little link there. What's a soma, Dr. Mogg? All right? Now, fast definition, living body, right? But don't stop there. Don't stop with living body. That's still third person. So when the hippies talk about it, as I say in my book, The S-List, that you can read on somaspace.org, it says it's a living body experience from within, man. Now, that's a little better. That's what Thomas Hanna, who started all this science stuff back in the 60s, talks about, right? Now, he gets a little nuts, and he calls it a self-moving, self-experiencing sensory motor system. Right, a little heavy. But basically, a pizza, a baby, a dog, and a hurricane are all somas. Now we've got to figure out what kind of soma they are. That's where I come in. All right? Now, you have orientations you take within yourself. Again, you're experiencing yourself within out. Well, let's figure this out. When you're born as a baby, your first orientation is to bond with other somas like you. Philosomatic, me and other people like me. Mostly mommy and daddy. That philosomatic orientation takes us through the whole first year of life. It builds up our parietal lobes in our brain. It makes us more into our gross motor system. It helps us do a whole bunch of different things. All right, now that's 70% basically of the population, almost, takes that orientation and builds on it for their entire developmental cycle. That becomes the way that they are, their identity. All that stuff builds on that orientation. Now, a scant 12% of us wait to the second year of life, and we say, you know, done a lot in focusing on others. What about me? And they go ontosomatic and reference themselves, and they become very sensitive to everything that happens within them. Very good. It's a big somatic thing to do. Now, that's 80% of the population was taken care of in those two steps, right? 68 for the philos, 12 for the ontos, right? Third year of life, emotions kick in. Uh-oh, here come the emotions. Now we're going to amplify what happens between us and other people and all around us, and we're going to get extra personal. We're going to tune into the surroundings now. Forget the self. What's going on in this room? What's the vibe in here? Do I feel space when I breathe? Or do I feel a little tight in here, a little tight in here? You know, and that process, that four-second window starts to dance. Now we're spinning all these plates, right? Only 9% of us park our car developmentally in the fourth year of life in what's called the exosomatic orientation. What these people do, and again, we're talking 9% of the population, is they take the sum total of those other three orientations and they figure out which one of them works best, and they develop systems on top of it that become basically the raw materials for cognition that you get later on in development. But all that biology goes on without you being aware of any of it, because you don't have a brain to be qualified to do that, because your neuroception is not there yet. You're still building a nervous system, right? Building a brain, like Build-A-Bear. So those four orientations, I'll repeat them again, philo, onto, eco, exo, are called domains because they're fixed perspectives. We don't get to choose. They choose us. And every 4 seconds we're saying, which one makes me feel safe? Which one makes me feel safe? And I said, almost 70% of us always pick bonding with other people because it's easier to let them do it for us as a baby, and we'll figure it out later. Right? Now, I foraged through and became an eco, an empathic sapien. So I tune into other people's emotions, and that, well, look at the job I got, right? And other people tune into the ontosomatic rhythm, and they become natural leaders, and they're self-started. They go on their internal rhythm. They march to the beat of their own drummer. They're all those people that are creative in the face of a lot of adversity, they aren't so somatic. You know, we've seen a bunch of them. Now, if you want to read the S list, it gives you examples. I'm going to focus on one guy here for about 15 minutes and give you a little taste. Let's see if this thing is working. All right, now, first, let's see if I still have it here. As Filippi scoots around. Boy, there is just a lot going on tonight. Here we go. Now, the exosape as a person, when you meet him, is sort of shark-like. So, in honor of that, we'll play a little Jaws here. See if this YouTube will work, and I'll give you a little. Here we go.
You go inside the cage. Cage goes in the water. You go in the water. Shark's in the water. Our shark. Farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston.
Okay, try to keep off the
All right, George is in the water. Anyway, so when you get to this thing, oh my God, I'm just getting word here that this could be 500,000 people dead. Oh my God. Wow. That really stops the trains. That is so sad. I can't even describe it. So this exosomatic orientation that a lot of people take when they get into shock, it's an impersonal rhythm. So if you go back to somaspace.org and you're on that page, okay, I'm going to break down the exo pattern here for you. Because it's a very rare pattern, but it happens to be the one of our special sapient guest, Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. All right, so here's a little skinny on. Here's the exo profile. All right. Like I said, 9% of the population. Okay. This is the autonomous somatic orientation. Yeesha with the thing. Which goes back to that relatively self-sufficient fourth of your life. People with this primary domain are more perceptive somas that seek the formal, more functional vibe of other people, right? They like formality. Think of Obama, right? Their attention focuses on deepening that systemic connection, which makes them very sensitive to changes in their highly structured world. Now, in our population, they'll call that Asperger's. Hey, when did they diagnose that thing? Yeah, 3 or 4 years old. They draw their coherence from impersonal sources, I.M. personal sources, not the interpersonal, not the extrapersonal, not the interpersonal, I.M. personal, impersonal, and use an analytical awareness to access it. So they're very analytical again. So we're talking really Spock-like here, right? Their reference point for wholeness is all the tools, technologies, and methods, all the things they do to take those other three orientations and figure out which one's best. They're utopian in the way that they function. So they have a real kind of aura about them that they're so different. When they have high coherence, they're Zen-like to us. They're Clint Eastwood to us. They're larger-than-life figures to us because they're not us. They're so rare. They strive for the most universal and objective level to relate or communicate. Okay, one of the great things about Obama early on was they said, wow, he's really good at reading the teleprompter. He's really good at giving a speech because he can get to this very high, objective, universal level and relate to everybody. Okay? They learn best in observational, predictable settings, so a more regimented approach is favored in their behavior. Look at the way this guy's done this act. Everything's been, you know, Krispy Kreme, right? Now, of course, that gets to be phony for a minute. I'll tell you why in a second. Okay, they also gravitate to multimedia formats. One of the things in Obama's campaign, one of the things that made it unique was that he was into social media and he used that to raise a lot of money. He's very good at it. He gravitated to it. He didn't have any fear of technology. He moved right through it. Their optimal interpersonal distance is what's known as public space, 12 to 25 feet away. That's why he likes waving to you. But, you know, yeah, he doesn't come over to the rope line and shake hands as much as, say, ooh, I don't know, Bubba Clinton did, you know. Well, the other rope line. Right? So are you an exo? Okay, now you can answer that question pretty easily. By taking this little narrative here. Now, I'm going to read it to you quick. And you just think of Obama, all right? I know some of you don't want to, but think of Obama and just picture him saying these words. I'll do my best impression here for a second, okay? I consider myself
a very intricate and precise person and need structure to be at my best. I sound like Nixon. He's out, though. I value and nurture information and enjoy customizing new technologies to suit myself. I can easily ignore others and feel a profound sense of irritation when that's not possible. I'm a team organizer and thrive in group settings where I can analyze their productivity. Some would say that I'm overly serious. Why so serious? But in fact, I need to make some kind of classification in order to know I'm fully interacting. Data is my guiding force, and I'm very good at methodically tracking multiple layers of detailed information. I like being considered an expert translator, synthesizer, and skilled worker. More than anything, I want the world to become more open to the facts that run our lives. All right, now that's the narrative. That's the story behind the exo. So if you meet someone who has that kind of life story going, that's their identity. Their identity is in the data, their information. So when you take the facts away or something upsets the apple cart, they lose it. So again, 9%, they don't have a lot of people they can map to. So it's like that reaching out part I talked about before. They're not looking to reach out. They're not social, okay? They're cultural. They understand the culture without being part of it. Think of George Carlin, someone like that. They can sit back and commentate on it without needing to be part of it. They sort of live in that little bubble, right? So a couple of ways to look at people. If you get a picture of Obama up there while you're listening to me, this makes it a little easier. You could take any picture of Obama. I don't care, any picture you got, even ones he's smiling with family, right? The mirroring exercise, you and him, like if you're just interacting with him one-on-one, now it's not dynamic because he's not standing there talking to you, but when you're in the company of exos, you'll notice this, is that your eyes will not have any sense of connection with the other person. It's almost like there's a horizontal filter there. There's like you just can't get a bead on him. You can't get both their eyes to focus on both your eyes. There's no connection. The focus doesn't travel. So it's like a cold, kind of blocky thing there. There's no bond. Most of anybody else you meet, there's a human, there's a warmth coming out of them, there's a pulse there. With an exo, there's a decided sense of coolness, almost aloofness. Okay? So that's the first thing. When you mirror with them with your eyes, you don't feel that connection. All right? So now you go to the attention level, the energy level, and again, the hearts don't match up. There's not a lot of oscillation between your heartbeats with the other person. You have a hard time getting the rhythm with the way they move and breathe. They're sort of operating dependent of you. It's hard to get them to sync up. You know, most people, you stand around with them for a while, you start leaning the way they lean. They don't mirror you. They don't match you. They don't attend to you. They're almost completely, it's almost like they're on the phone. Like they're not present with you in the room. So that's the second layer. And then when you just look at their eyes, like I said before, you think of that Clint Eastwood, that shark eye. And then you know, wow, I've really got someone that's an exo here. That's the one that's how you know it's wired, and that's their primary domain. You look at that eye and you go, it's got a glass eye, you know, like Quinn says. And so that's really the three basic things somatically that you want to experience when you want to profile someone and see if they're exos or not. And people will do this at a high and low degree of coherence, but for the most part, those three things will always be true. You can't match up the eyes, you don't feel the energy coming chest to chest, there's no heart, there's no emotional connection to them. And your observation of them is this very, very kind of almost flat, dull eye coming at you, like a shark eye, that doesn't really give you any information. So those are the three things. Now, behavior patterns, you know, it formal greetings, you know, very understated body language. They listen with a very matter-of-fact voice tone, kind of thing. They're very analytical. And they never feel equal to anyone. That's a big thing with exos. They're either inferior or superior. They never feel equal to anyone. And they get a little antsy when they feel inferior. They get, like I said, that social stress for them. There's a lot of times they come up, they go, wow, I can't handle this, and they start to criticize. They're polite but detached. All right? Bodily contact is very detached. They're very, very interested in continuity. They work from the future to the present. Like I said, they're utopian. They're always trying to upgrade the status quo and get past that shock because the shock takes them out of their rhythm. Communication habits, okay? You get more interested in what they're saying than exos are more interested in what you're saying than how you speak. So they ignore voice tones. They just take the verbal out, almost like they just take the text file. Okay, what did they really say? And they look at it structurally. And what happens is that you fall into a lot of awkward silence with them because they're analyzing you. Buffer, buffer. Okay, got it. Right? It dovetails when they start thinking about multiple ideas at the same time because, again, they can process things. So you don't interrupt them when they're talking. They'll get pissed because it's like they've got five or six windows open in their head and they're processing something. So you look for that stare. They don't nod. They'll stare at you if they're validating what you're saying. That's a little disconcerting if you're someone who's trying to bond with them. They just give you this blank stare. It's like, and that's agreement to them. They have very practical values, so production, usefulness, relevance. They're always on that. They tend to gesture with their right to reinforce new ideas and their left one for old ideas. So if they're thinking of something new, they're going to talk with their right hand more. If they're thinking of something old, they're going to talk with their left hand more. That's a subtlety. See if you notice that one when you're watching Obama talk. All right, and they use very pragmatic words for change. Remember, the whole thing is about change. So they'll say scrap, improve, redesign, overhaul, you know, reset. You know, we're going to retool. It's like everything with them is renewal. It's going to start over again. It's going to be better. That's the way they focus, okay? So let's go a little exo-spotting here. How do they walk? All right, when you watch Obama, careful strides, rolling steps, very subdued, sporadic arm swings, okay? Well, how do they talk? They love to analyze, sort for evidence, very preemptive in conversations. You watch him when he gets a little antsy, he gets a little exo, he gets a little choppy in his conversations, right? So I'll give you that one. They're technical, right? They love the media. They love all these databases. They love anything that's fact sorting. That's where they're going to go when they need to kind of on the survival side. And their world is always about optimizing the current case scenario. So they have a very organized view of the future. But it's not attached to them. That's the difference. And the reason why is the four-year-old brain, remember the four-year-old brain was when they downloaded all this, can tell the difference between past, present, and future. So exos are biologically predisposed to lying. Isn't that interesting? So they're very plastic in the way they can present themselves. Think of Robert De Niro. He could be, are you looking at me? He could be there, or he could be a comedian and be in the Fockers movie. So that they're very, you know, elusive in that sense. So, you know, like I said, David Duchovny, you think of these guys like that. Uma Thurman, you know, they're all there. Anyway, check out the S list for more of that. See if our guest is here yet. Nope, not yet. Should be in a couple minutes. So, but that's a little guided tour. Let's see if I can play that clip. If I can get over there quick enough. Let me be nimble. Let me be quick. Let's see. Now, you know, the famous thing I'm going to play here is the one when Obama gets heckled, but I'm going to play a little riff on it here. Let's see. First guy I ever have anyone stand up and shout out when he's making a speech as Obama. The stuff this guy's had to deal with is, it really is classic. Yeah, let's see. This is a little YouTube clip here. Let's see if I can dial it in from Domedia. See how this ends this time. Maybe our guest will show up right after that.
The reforms I'm proposing would not apply to those who are here illegal.
I'm going
to
let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
That's, of course, the famous You Lie speech from last year. And if you watch it, he's gesturing with his left hand. So here he is talking about new stuff, gesturing with his left hand. He did lie. He did lie. If you're looking at the body language, he did lie. So, and look what's happened. Were they new? No. They're all dredged up from old stuff. So we'll get into that a little bit. Let's see if our guest is here yet. Let's see. No, she hasn't dialed in yet. I guess it's kind of a blind date for me, so hopefully we'll get along. She's popping in for about 15 minutes. Happens to have the same last name as me. We met through social media. Isn't that interesting? So again, just to recap, we're talking exos here. So if you know anybody out there that you think might be an exo, you want me to figure it out for you, pop me an email at nakedsoma@gmail.com, or get your butt on the air and talk about it with me, and we'll see if we can figure it out. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between exos and ontos, and we'll get into that in a couple of weeks when we focus on someone from the culture that gives you a good example of that behavior. But these orientations, like I said, they're not labels. They're just biologically, kind of anchors.
that we use to figure out the world. And when you understand how what attracts, what gets attracted to the exo domain, what ideas come through there, what behaviors come through there, human beings actually get wired through it, it's pretty fascinating. We all need to develop technical skills. We all need to figure out how to use a knife and a fork, all that stuff. So those are all exo signatures. They're all behaviors that come from that domain, yet only 9% of the population calls that domain home. Okay. All right. So without further ado, let's get the scope out here and pop it in from land. My blind date for the evening here, Gabriella Filippi.
Well, hello, Mark Filippi. Dr.
Hello.
Mark, how are you? And thank
wow.
you so much for the invitation and the warm welcome.
Yeah, I'm blown away. I mean, and again, this is the magic of Twitter. And I guess you followed me first. I forget how this started, but...
I actually ended up getting some cross emails, and I have two from other Filippis in other countries. It's been wild. It's been a wild and woolly chase. So there are Filippis in Australia and in Italy that I'm now pen pals with as well. So it's all good.
Wow. Now this is your maiden name, Filippi? You come from a Filippi family? Are you married into it? Or
no, married into it. Right.
Oh, you're married into it. Ah, piggybacker. Okay.
It's a great name, though. It kind of flows.
Yeah, well, the spelling gets a little optional. I don't know how they spell it in Chicago, but...
Same way.
With the E's and the Y's and the P-H's, all those people make me crazy.
Yeah, how about it?
Two L's and all that. The bank loves me, because every time I come down there, it's a spelling bee. But wow, so this is wild. So you married into the family. So what was your maiden name also Italian, or...?
No, actually, my family was from Europe, but more Prussia and Yugoslavia. So I actually didn't even speak English when I was growing up. So, very interesting. So I'm bilingual and on certain days trilingual.
Okay, well, believe me, sometimes every once in a while that makes sense. But so I go for that. But, if people aren't familiar with Gabriella's work, it's GabriellaFilippi.com is where she hangs out. And, she's got a pretty eclectic resume here and, just spanning the extremes. Physiologist, writer, speaker, business owner, health consultant. I mean, isn't that enough titles? I mean, I got enough hats on my end, but that is Filippi-esque, by the way, to do that.
Filippi-esque, I like that.
Yes.
No, it's all been good. Multiple hats, and I have just been very fortunate to have so many opportunities come my way and maybe make some opportunities, and lived in Sydney, Australia for a while and enjoyed that and grew a network there and have been back, and so it's been great. So Chicago and Sydney are my two favorite places.
And you grew up where? You grew up in Europe?
In Chicago, actually. No, I was born in Chicago. But spoke, just European and at home and just kind of, went to school not really knowing English, It wanted to come out in English, but it didn't. So, but then I taught myself English, interestingly enough. So by the end of kindergarten, I had it down.
Yeah, we could never tell. I mean, to tell you the truth, you could never tell that you had that background talking to you here. So
pretty much got the Chicago accent.
You blended in pretty well, is what I'm saying. So talk to me about Obama here for a minute, because I don't know if you got there when he was a senator and heard him locally, coming up through the ranks, because Oprah basically anointed him. That's Oprah's job, to anoint whoever. Just going back, this new book came out, the Game Change book, a couple of days ago. All this background stuff about the campaign made the Edwards people look bad, made the Clintons look bad, a lot of strife between Obama and the Biden camps, got into the whole Sarah Palin thing and the behind-the-scenes stuff with the McCain. Like, basically all the dirty laundry you'd ever want to know, because we've gone behind the music, we've gone behind everything else. Why don't we go behind the campaign now?
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I take away from the fallout from that book and all the stuff that's gone on, even in the last couple of months with Obama, is that we as a culture misunderstood this guy from the beginning. And a lot of mirrors are kind of coming down. So as someone who's maybe seen a more local version of him as he became a national figure, even if you track him back as far as the 2004 Democratic Convention when he made the speech in Boston and kind of burst on the scene, what do you make of him from all your eclectic background, all your Filippi hats there? When you see this guy, what is his identity? What is his persona that you see that's real? Because a lot of things have proven to be a little flimsy.
Yeah, and I have read some of your background information on exotypes, and I find it extremely interesting. I have not done the research that you have or even close to it on to the extent of exotypes. I think it's remarkably interesting. So
thanks.
I think you have that correct in that Mr. Obama is very focused, and rightly so. He stepped into a very tall task with America. And interestingly enough, I think if you, in my opinion at least, if you analyze the presidents in the era that they arrived at the presidency, it's almost as though they fit the era. You know, sure, Ronald Reagan is always nice to have. He was a great president. He was the social type that, you know, is probably opposite of the XO.
Yeah, he's Philo. He's a bonder.
Right, and very likable by
most,
if not all, Americans. You know, it was a sad day when he passed. And so, you know, we don't have that here. However, I think Obama fits the time period, and this is what we need right now. This is what America needs. I think, and if we're, I think you had mentioned the Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid's phrase, and if, just for clarification, I think you had said something about, you know, what became of the book. There was some...
Yeah, that came out of the book, Harry Reid's statements about him, that he quickly had to run up a tree and apologize, I think, for a solid day.
Yeah.
And again, just like a lot of political scandals, had it happened today or tomorrow...
Uh-huh.
No one would have ever heard about these comments he made,
right.
But it happened on Monday on a slow news cycle, and they picked the poor guy, you know, basically down to the bone. But again, this is another thing of Obama campaigned as someone who was trying to transcend race, and all he's done is talk about race, and because the rest of the country, of course, can't let go of it. They cannot stop dealing with this. And these comments come out. Harry Reid, who's basically been, you know, one of his two or three, you know, Confederates there, if you want to call him that, in the Congress, doing a lot of his dirty work, literally, rolling up his sleeves, trying to get the health care bill through, and just these, him and Pelosi, are so much more consummate politicians, natural politicians than Obama. Obama, to me, he'd be much happier, like, running a university somewhere, like, giving speeches, and, like, this is to him, it's almost, I don't want to say, like, it's, I don't, beneath him, it just seems intellectually like it's almost like to him it's exhausting because he's got to deal with a lot of bureaucracy. And Harry Reid puts his foot in his mouth with this statement about Obama. Oh, he's a light-skinned black guy, and he can talk in a dialect. All these weird. This is what came out of this Game Change book, and I'm curious if you're in Obama's world and you hear a comment like that, knowing everything you know about him, how would you say he would look at something like this? Would he get that visceral reaction that most of us get when we get, you know, judged that way? Or would he just look at it as, you know, sort of like almost like in a car wash, like it wouldn't affect him emotionally? How would you look at that?
No, we never know what goes on in private moments, but I think he's always chosen the diplomatic route, which is a wise choice. He's always been very quick to respond in a positive fashion, as he did with Mr. Reid's remarks, and calling him a good man was politically correct and also a very good statement. And I think I think he's a good man for responding in that way personally. However, to be president of anything, you can, it's not for the squeamish. You need to have a very thick skin. And so you need to let some of those remarks, you need to let all of those remarks just slide right off you. I think President Obama is more than just the 44th president of the United States, in my opinion. He's more than the first African-American president, more than a successful, driven baby boomer who's a leader. in helping us get to the next rung of achievement here in America. Mr. Obama represents a time of healing for our nation. And so the racial issues will come up because he actually lived through those in his private sector since birth. So his personal life was one that reflected that, and I think he is the best candidate to be able to move us into that time of healing. And so I think it's time for us to embrace rather than reject. It's time for us to grow, because if we keep rejecting and making comments and trying to pit sides, then we'll never bond and grow as a nation. And other nations look at America as that, where we've always been the land of opportunity. We've always been that stronger nation. And so now is the time where we really can rise up, because they see that there is potential conflict, and there has been on the horizon. So now is the time when we can do just the opposite and bond. So, I mean, it's going to, without a doubt, there are going to be some, you know, personal issues that come up. But we would do better if we were to embrace. So
And this is something that I guess you're uniquely qualified to handle, because, you know, like Obama, you're sort of a world citizen in a way where you don't have that same feeling of insider-outsider. When someone says, you know, like, we got the Olympics next month, and I guarantee there'll be some moment where the ugly American will come up and do something, you know, to get, you know, attention, whether it be an athlete, a broadcaster, something will happen. And it's like that perception of us. And the Americans are sort of, I don't know, we talk about thick skin, we're sort of just numb to the fact that the rest of the world gets a lot of opportunity to look at us in a lesser light, because we frankly don't care. We're very kind of irreverent about it, where other cultures, you almost never see, the ugly Australian, the ugly New Zealand person. It just, they don't have that. They don't export their, you know, their social debris as much as we do. We do it very readily, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at us from the outside of American pop culture, and you see Obama, now around the world, instantly this man was much more popular and much more accessible, and he made it really, in the first 6 months of his presidency, he made it really kind of his sort of mission to sort of heal a lot of the wounds that had happened over the previous 8 years internationally. And you know, the Nobel Peace Prize, and that was kind of like, what the heck is he getting this for? And then like 2 months later, he's got to escalate the war, and today he's asking for $33 billion. There's a lot of contradiction between him as a campaigner and him as a transition or a cultural icon, that sort of Oprah personality, that orator, and then how he's governing. So how do you, who can see his self-image from all these different angles, spiritual, all these different things, how do you see him sort of negotiating all those things and getting all those balloons lined up into something that can withstand what's going to be, you know, this is 1 year, the next three of his presidency, you know, and be able to maintain his sanity, number one, knowing that he's an exo that strives for logic and strives for, you know, some sense of continuity when you've got all these disparate things going on, and you know, the latest thing being this earthquake that it has sort of taken over the news now. He's forced to be, you know, Obama the humanitarian, and he's got to go back in next month and fight for health care.
Right. And while you've brought that up, I think that is such a tragic issue today. We support a very big cause. As a matter of fact, I'll be part of my next publication. I will be devoting part of my proceeds to a group called Feed My Starving Children. And we package foods for mainly the starving children in Haiti. So my heart goes out to just all the families today there, and it's a trickle effect, all the people that are affected in and throughout, and those that support Haiti. So that is a huge issue, and I'm glad you brought that up. So I just would like to extend prayers and, you know, ask for prayers for those of Haiti and anyone involved in that. But in terms of your question, I think it's so multifaceted, and I think it deserves a lengthy response, but one that also I think would allude to the fact that, thank goodness, he has a cabinet of people, because I think he'll know who to plug into, who to employ to handle which case. And I think a person of his personality type, if you were to put it that way, you know, speaking of exos, is able to do it that way. They think more systematically. So they're able to look at people in systems and say, here's who I need to employ to handle this case or this situation or this person. So, and in that case, he'll be able to address issues well and utilize his people, so to speak, his cabinet, his resources. I think sometimes he'll be in that off situation where, as you know, we've witnessed lately, or we have witnessed in the past year, where, you know, emotions might get in the way, and anybody's feathers can get ruffled. I mean, you know, myself included, no one's perfect, so he'll be put in that situation where if you're thrown off guard and you had just enough that day, you're going to blow a gasket. So things can happen.
Like I said before we came on the air, you know, we're dealing with a lot with thresholds. And you, who were wired into the Onto profile at that terrible two age, that made you such an independent self-sufficient person, would have a much lower threshold for that statement you just made than someone like Obama, who's got a slow fuse, but when it goes, he's going to burn down the village, and that's just the way it is. Where an Onto is going to spark, and then 15 seconds later, you're going to forget about it and get back on to the next thing, because the way your system is wired is for, you know, immediacy. It likes that sort of like the woodpecker, you know, like that rhythm of activity, that kind of frenetic activity, which gives you a lot of creativity, but also sometimes people get in the line of fire and, you know, don't cross my path kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Where he's Ricky Dicky Tavi over here.
Yeah, and you're right. And I think if you looked at and analyzed the bios and the profiles of past presidents, though,
mm-hmm.
you'll probably see some of those common threads, though, because in some respects it's almost like that all or nothing that gets things done. It's almost like that fight or flight that brings
mm-hmm.
us to action. So you'll read, and I'm not going to name any name, but you'll read profiles or bios of past presidents that have driven their cars through garages
yeah.
and saved by their wives, or, you know, taken their fists through walls. So it's unfortunate, but that also is suppressed anger coming through. And so it's only natural that when handling so much stress, somehow, some way, it's going to come out. And that's, you know, we could talk all day tomorrow, if you like, about how to handle stressors. But,
well,
you know,
yeah, I mean, we both have our resources for it. I mean, you've seen Obama. If you look at pictures of him, he's gotten grayer. I mean, this job sucks the life force out of you like no other job. And, I mean, even just to me, I'm someone who needs like a week to recover from any kind of like plane travel. When he was like zipping back and forth to Copenhagen and all that,
right.
and he went out for the, I'm saying to myself, how does this guy know what day it is? He's like,
right.
he's every 7 hours he's on a plane, and those are the things that I think kind of get him out of his wheelhouse, because so many things happen and you got to turn on a dime. And that's why, you know, Clinton, being an eco and an empathic guy and sort of like, you know, a little all over the place like me, he can sort of just bounce around like a pinball and just deal with things. And, I mean, he had, like, I don't know how many scandals he had in 8 years. He just kept going along, and he got impeached. He kept going along. He just,
yeah.
You know, there was it's like that freight train never stopped. And Obama, again, this is a perfect example. Clinton married an Onto in Hillary, and Obama is with Michelle, also an Onto. So it's like the rudder on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So where Bill would always have to know, okay, where's Hillary? I go 180 degrees away from that. So it's like he just knew where to go. Where she was, he went the opposite way. Where Obama can actually, you almost feel like his sanctuary, his kind of salvation is to go back into his marriage, and you don't see Michelle, you know, overshadowing him or undermining him as much as Hillary did with Bill all the way through their presidency. Actually, they were like co-presidents, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you know, just to give people a flavor for your work, before I know you got to take off here, is you know, if you go on the Gabriella site while we're talking at GabriellaFilippi.com,
very eclectic site. I mean, she's an artist, and she's this, and she's, it's just amazing. I mean, I don't know how you squeeze it all on one website, actually. But you've got a new book coming out this summer called Celebrate Your Seasons, right? This
mm-hmm,
is the thing
I
they just emailed me here.
Yes.
Tell us about that book for a second. What's in it?
Sure. It is a fun inspirational that hopefully will help towards growth. And it mirrors the seasons of our lives with the seasons of the year and the seasons of our circumstances. And that's a lot of seasoning.
Yeah.
Seasoning helps us grow to where hopefully we want to be in life and where we aspire to be. Let's put it that way. So it'll address issues like wisdom and encouragement and truth and all sorts of fun topics that just really make you think, very thought-provoking, some stories that will make you probably cry, some stories that will make you laugh, and it's just an inspirational, and who can't use inspirational, especially at this time?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I need it every 10 minutes, but I mean, especially with this, I'm thinking to myself, since Sunday, there's been about four huge, you know, news stories, and like I was saying at the top of the hour was that 24 hours ago, the biggest thing was Conan's quitting the Tonight Show, and then all of a sudden we have 500,000 people dead. You know, it kind of pales it. So your book kind of gives people a little bit of a, a little pamphlet.
Encouragement. And, you know, I think the bottom line on the book, too, which is really growing to be my mantra in life, the more I think anyone that experiences a lot in life can tell you that adversity is probably their best friend. And through adversity comes a lot of grace, comes a lot of learning and growing. And so I've learned also that opportunities arise from obstacles, and that has kind of been my mantra. And when you look at it that way, everything takes on a different hue.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in terms of the whole Obama issue as well, I really think that we are faced with so many opportunities here, but if we choose to look at them as obstacles, they'll just remain as obstacles. You've got it's kind of like looking at winter as just winter. If you just look at it as winter, you'll miss the spring. You'll miss that there are buds actually under the ground. If you live in the Midwest, California's a different story. But if you live in the Midwest, there are actually buds under the ground waiting to appear in spring. And that's life. That's the seasons of life, too. So it looks as an obstacle initially, looks as though it is.
Mm-hmm.
But in essence, it's an opportunity out on the horizon. So that's kind of how I look at it, and it's so far proven to be true. It's always
well.
Better.
And you guys out there listening to Gabriella's sweet voice here, and she sounds very Philo, but believe me, that voice is from Australia or something. Because when you get into her persona and look at her soma, that is an Anto we're listening to. So she's got a nice sweet Philo voice, but don't mess with her. She's got a book up there she's going to offer to you guys called Along the Way. It's her old book. So you just pop her an email and go to the contact page on her website at GabriellaFlippy.com and just put your name, say you mentioned you heard her on the show, and she'll shoot you a copy of the book Along the Way, which is another, effort that I perused on the website that, you work with a lot of different groups of people, youth, development stuff, and it's just, I'm telling you, if you spend 5 minutes there, first of all, she's got my last name, so you know she's been, hit with the woo wand. She's extremely woo, actually. So there's a lot of stuff in there that's between the synapses that I can't explain. You just have to go over and experience the site and get used to the fact that this person has studied a lot of different things. And you would have no idea what might come out of her mouth in any given moment because these maps are all running around in her head.
And by the way, Mark, I went ahead and registered for your OVI newsletter.
Thanks.
To hearing from you on a regular basis.
Oh yeah, well you'll hear me. I mean, if you've gotten, I don't know if you checked out the last one I did. I've had a lot of technical challenges this week, as you might know. Maybe you do.
Yeah.
Mercury's still in retrograde till Friday, so it is out there being its usual mischief itself, and it damn near just drove me to distraction between Sunday night and Tuesday morning. I think I spoke to just about every technical support guy in New Delhi. To get the thing to work, but it'll get easier. Yeah, well, everyone's been there, but I wish I could just get out of there. Well, anyway, you know, anything else you want to say in parting there about your company? You got anything coming up? Any talks you want to invite people to?
Yeah, you know, there are a few, but they can always just go to the website, and
okay.
I have another website coming up as well. It's just Gabriella D. Filippi. That's through the Authors Guild. So there'll be two websites and then one that will publicize the book. But I guess there is. In closing, I guess I was just thinking about how, in Celebrate Your Seasons, my new book coming up, I also address individual character and integrity. And just in terms of those issues, I guess not to get too philosophical or deep here, but I think America is just such a great land we live in. I think if you've been anywhere else and experienced other countries and the way they run government and stuff, you just really realize how fortunate we are here. And it's time we look at an individual's character and integrity, not their race, religion, ethnicity, ability or disability, et cetera, et cetera. Diversity is America. America is all about diversity. And diversity that merges ideas and content to arrive at the greater good really is going to equate to reaching the next rung on that ladder of reaching our potential. And we have so much potential here, and I'm just excited for this next year coming up in America. So that's my closing remark.
Wow, I feel like, you know, I feel like the saluting or something. I don't know. Your voice is almost like biofeedback to me, because I very rarely hear anybody that has anything pleasant to say around here in Larchmont.
Thanks for
bringing a little Chicago sunshine to the summertime
today.
Because
anytime, yeah. Call again and to be continued. How about that?
Definitely have you on again. We got a lot to talk about, because we got to get into the whole soul thing with you. When your book comes out, maybe in the summer, we'll get you back on and we'll rap about that. And in between, we'll be twitting and tweeting or whatever the heck they call it. And
you better believe it. Thanks so much, Dr. Mark.
All right, thanks again,
right.
And travel light, and have a nice, excellent winter out there in Chicagoland.
You too. Take care.
Take care.
Bye bye now.
All right, there she goes, Gabriella Filippi. I knew she'd married in. She's too nice to be a real Filippi. She got in through marriage, so maybe we'll have her husband on to explain himself one day. So let's see if we got little Elvis to the trailer out there.
What the fuck was he talking about?
There you go. Sorry, Gabriella, I couldn't resist. Anyway, for the most part, you know, taken away from what she was saying about Obama, that she's someone that deals with people on that level of integrity and the real soul sticky stuff. You know, we're looking at it from a somatic standpoint, so we get to be a little sussy and a little more raw because we're dealing with it as a behavior. Now, when you look at people's behavior as distinct from their identity, you get that psychological garbage out of your head, because what happens is it's sort of a Forrest Gump thing. Stupid is as stupid does. Well, we tend to associate our core behaviors with our identity, because they our physical way of expressing ourselves and our social way of communicating somewhat reflects our mental outlook, right? But the thing is that they're not an absolute thing. They're not a triangulation. They're sort of an oscillation. So sometimes we do things that are outside our character, that are not us, and we'll say, I wasn't myself. I wasn't myself when I did that. I lost my mind. You know, and all those things come up. Now, Obama, you're starting to see his secondary domains, which, again, he's not as entrained into these. He's sort of an uber exo. So when he gets pushed and stressed, and his fibers start to go, he can't use his survival coping mechanisms anymore, and he has to go into some of these deeper habits that come from other people. He's going to go where? He's going to go onto first, because he's around Michelle. He's entrained her signatures, and you'll see him start to point his fingers and be very onto and stern and short with people that way and be very decisive. Because one of the things that people criticize Obama for is that he's not decisive. He just sits there and gathers information forever. And Gabriella said, you know, one of his strengths, again, this is going back now, is his ability to delegate and put the right people in the right job. Well, you look at what's going on with the Treasury thing. You look what's going on with this health care bill. Swing and a miss. The one stroke of genius out of all this, it's kind of funny, is Hillary, as Secretary of State, is thriving in this role. Because what does she get to do? She gets to get on a plane. She gets to go to some foreign leader and kick him in the balls and tell him what for. And it's like, you know, this is amazing. She gets to be basically the boss on six other continents. And so she was actually a good appropriation, but politically, you know, I don't know how fast that she'll throw him under the bus, but so far she's been a really good soldier for him. It's amazing. She's been the one loyalist out of all of them. And, you know, just to repeat, that book Game Change came out, and boy, has the dirt been flying. So, and that's what I'm saying. That we're living in that TMZ culture, that gossipy culture that the exos hate, because there's a lot of garbage that comes up that you have to kind of sift through, and you kind of got to get the windshield wiper fluid out to get it out of your mindset. And when the Harry Reid quote came out, you know, you saw the apology cycle kick in. And Obama's got to forgive everybody, by the way. He's got to sit there like the Pope. And the Pope got attacked. He met his attacker, another exo, right, having to deal with stuff. And it's like he's got to forgive this guy. He's got to forgive the guy that said you lie. And he's got to forgive the other. It's like, you know, Jesus didn't have to forgive this many people. All right? Now, take the Conan O'Brien situation. I know it pales in comparison to what's going on in Haiti. But here's another exo guy who goes by the contract, goes by the promises that were made, and, you know, look what happens. He gets burned. And this is the second time they burn him. And it's kind of funny because, you know, Letterman had the same situation happen to him a number of years ago, again with Jay Leno involved. So, you know, the fodder back and forth, of course, is going to go on, you know, for a while now, as this thing kind of mushrooms into a huge viral thing going into the Olympics. I mean, my God, hey, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to use this. I mean, the TV industry really is they're sort of their best, sort of the quality, I guess, about it as a media is that they can just create stories that attract people over and again. And they just become these huge whales that land on the beach and everyone just feeds off them. So this Conan thing's not going to go away. You know, and then he's going to go through his deal, with Jay. He's going to go through his deal with, am I going to go to Fox? And people are going to follow it. So you look at Harry Reid. He went out and did his apology tour. Conan went out yesterday and said a bunch of stuff. Let's see if I can find it here. He has head injury. It was pretty funny. Let's see if this thing says anything. It's 55 seconds in my YouTube glory here. Summertime with nothing. Let's see.
Late night talk show host Conan O'Brien says he won't be doing The Tonight Show if it comes on after midnight.
He's a little mad.
This is NBC's plan, part of a late night comedy shuffle as it moves Jay Leno to 11:35 Eastern. Leno had come on at 10, but the show grabbed low ratings and complaints from NBC stations. In a statement, O'Brien says he has suddenly been put in a very public predicament, and my bosses are demanding an immediate decision. He goes on to say that delaying The Tonight Show into the next day to accommodate another comedy program will seriously damage what I consider to be the greatest franchise in the history of broadcasting. As for where O'Brien goes next, even he is not sure. He closes his statement by saying he has no other offer and has no idea what happens next. Lee Powell, the Associated Press.
There you go. A little Conan news. I don't even know what I'm doing here. But next week we're going to be actually profiling a Philo, you know, Jay Leno, from our S-List book to understand his dynamics so that when you juxtapose, once you know these four domains by heart, once you can see them and notice them out in the world, the dynamics between them are fascinating because you see how it we're not all stuck in our primary domains. That's those secondary domains that we get from the social interactions, which are the other strategies, they'll show up when you have to adapt, when your habits don't work, when all your coping mechanisms fail, and you have to go and try another banana here and try another card. And how good you get from the age of 25 to the sticking the ground at switching to those secondary domains is really going to create your lasting well-being. Are you going to have the ability, the plasticity, to be able to do all that? And if you don't, then basically any one of those four domains will start to take you down, because in the beginning it provides you with a sense of coherence, right? Like I said before, those four-second windows. This is the orientation that makes me feel safe. Well, safe keeps you at status quo, and you need status quo. You need stability early on, and then as you get older, more transitions, more things happen, your life gets more complicated. You need more a capacity to deal with instability, which is where the secondary domains come up, and to be able to shift as your tasks change and your roles change. Like if you're a Philo and you heard Gabriella's voice, very Philo, very bonding, very feminine voice, you know, very yielding voice, supportive voice, you know. She waited for me to finish my sentences, which never happens on the show. All these things. And you need suddenly to be very stern with a kid, or you need to deal with a subordinate at work, and you need to be very honto and decisive and be a leader. Being able to do that on a dime is a function of your flexibility, within your somatic awareness. And if you can't do it, then you sort of, don't get those things done, and these things become conflicts over time. And we live with a lot of those things because we never were taught how to shift gears like this. And the stuff I do in the somatic method gives you some strategies to do it. So please, for the love of Jesus, go over to somaspace.org and we'll scroll down where it says Meet the Four Domains. Click in. Check out the S-List book. I'm going to be developing that whole concept. And please sign up for the newsletter, too, because it gives you some things to increase your vitality throughout the week. Forget about health and disease. It's all a bunch of labels anyway. So there you go. So that's the show for the week. I'm plumb out of thoughts, guys, because there's so much going on that I want to, to interact with you guys about. But I need you to call me here. I need you to get on the damn horn, or at least shoot me some questions on the email at nakedsoma@gmail.com, so there's more to talk about. But I'm going to get into this concept more every week now. We're going to highlight one guy. We'll get an expert on to riff on, like we had Gabriella tonight, and see where it takes us. Because hopefully at the end of a month, you'll at least get four people that you can start to study out there and use as your social biofeedback to say, when Obama's name comes up, how many times a day do you hear this man's name or see his image? It's affecting your nervous system, I'm telling you. And the more coherent these images become, the more apparent they are to you, the more you're going to realize that neuroception thing. I said, am I safe? Am I safe? Some people hear his name and they feel threatened. I'm telling you, every single day they feel threatened because of what he represents to them. And we've gotten this guy all wrong. We've classified him with a bunch of outside filters. He doesn't have an interiority that we can go and explore. As an exo, they're like a big, solid block. They're like a brick. So it is WYSIWYG. It is what you see is what you get. Don't go fishing for things in there, right? Like I said before, when you watch him communicate on the UI clip, he's talking about new ideas and change, but he's gesturing with his left hand. Now, what is that doing? All right? He's talking about old ideas. Well, he's talking about change. But if you know he's talking in the third person, everybody else is being directed to their right, to the new. So he's looking for other people's new ideas from his old ones. That's complicated, and he doesn't even know it. But I do, here in the summer space. All right, so there you go. There's another dopey show for January 13th, which happens to be my son's birthday.
My name is Sue. How do you do? How are you gonna die? Yeah, that's what I told him.
So there you go. So let me see if I have this up here, because I think I had last week I wanted to get to it and I didn't do it. Okay, yeah, here's Lunesta. Here's one of these damn drugs that, a lot of people get pickled on. I just wanted to play this quick. These are the symptoms that you might experience if you're on the drug Lunesta. I don't know why I'm tossing it out there. It's left over from last week. Let's see what we get.
Lunesta helps you fall asleep quickly, so take it right before bed. Be sure you have at least 8 hours to devote to sleep before becoming active. Until you know how you'll react to Lunesta, you should not drive or operate machinery. Do not take Lunesta with alcohol. Call your doctor right away if after taking Lunesta you walk, drive, eat, or engage in other activities while asleep. In rare cases, severe allergic reactions can occur. Most sleep medicines carry some risk of dependency. Side effects may include unpleasant taste, headache, drowsiness, and dizziness. Why wait another night? Ask your doctor how a Lunesta night's sleep can help you wake this refreshed. Lunesta, a great tomorrow starts tonight.
There you go. There's a drug commercial for you. Some time. Why not? Throw that in there. It's really been one of those days. Like I said, my son's birthday. He's 15 years old today. And, you know, shout out to Kyle. Kyle Christopher Filippi, you should be asleep. But happy birthday. And I love you very much. And he is an exo. And so is my father. The great and powerful Von Jorge, George Filippi. Sitting there, the desert lion in the desert, hanging in there. So, from that perspective, I will send you out into summer space this week, you guys, and I wish you luck, and hopefully we'll have a little better news next week to report on. Until then, I will leave you with some Louis Armstrong, and I wish you good summer dreams. Hopefully this Mercury retrograde on Friday will spare some more of us. And I'll say, travel light, my friends. Travel light through the darkness.
It's a little loud, Louie.
Red roses, too.
Have it down.
I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're not much more than I never knew. To myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
God bless you, Haiti. You're out there. We love you. Be well. Travel light. Spiral on.